You're watching Double Standards with me, Afshin Ratansi. Well, for the next couple of weeks, London is hosting Palestine Place to highlight the racism of Zionism and Western sponsorship for the destruction of Palestine. For details about events in London, email this address. This week, we speak to a writer and saxophonist who has campaigned against Israeli crimes against humanity for most of his life. Coming up in the show, human rights NGO Amnesty International joined forces with Al-Qaeda in Syria. The battle to keep Greece in the euro continues as EU leaders do all they can to fight the wishes of the people of Europe. And we speak to the Jewish novelist, journalist and saxophonist Gilad Atzmon about Lebanon, Palestine and censorship. It's Diamond Jubilee weekend here in London, so you guessed it, we won't be covering it on this show. Meanwhile, what an election in Egypt, the first election where a candidate is in doubt since perhaps the pharaohs. While candidates for the election in Egypt may be making deals, who could have expected this deal? Here is Amnesty International criticizing UN Security Council members for not overthrowing the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria.
These permanent five members are meant to represent all the member states, but actually they're pretty much representing themselves.
Well, at least Amnesty has discovered that UN Security Council members are in it for themselves. I thought everyone knew that. Go on.
Of course, the Syrians themselves are fighting a brave fight. Initially, it started completely as peaceful protests, and now it's ended up having to go beyond that. But there's a limit to what they can do from inside, so the international community has to rise up.
Never fear, Mr. Secretary General of Amnesty International. Someone is rising to the call.
سلام على الأشاوس الشجعان والأحرار الأشراف في درعة وجسر الشغور ومعرة النعمان وبنياس وحمص وحمات البطولة والاستشهاد. سلام عليكم حيث كنتم في كل شبر.
Al-Qaeda joining up with Amnesty International. I didn't see that one coming. They are quite a secretive organization, though. Take a look at this.
Revealed Amnesty's secret £800,000 payoff to two bosses, which it doesn't seem very keen to talk about. Human rights group Amnesty International has paid more than £500,000 in a secret payoff to its former chief, it was revealed.
Well, $1.25 million doesn't go far these days for hush money. There is a recession on, you know. Come to think of it, why wasn't there more coverage of this story?
Big tax increases and spending cuts in early 2013 could trigger a recession, according to a recent report released by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office.
Ah, those big budget millionaire corner productions. Does mainstream media not want to cover the US's own nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, saying that the American economy is going to contract by 1.3%? The report goes on to say that the country could fall off a fiscal cliff. How do they afford all those drones that have killed scores of people in the developing world over the past few days? Boeing is currently developing the Solar Eagle, a new solar-powered drone that is supposed to stay up for 5 continuous years. In the past few days, it was reported that President Obama wants to sell them to Turkey, but Congress may not approve of the sale. The contraption is powered by rows and rows of solar cells that enable it to stay up for half a decade. The Americans developing it don't seem so interested in the human casualties caused by such a drone. They're more interested in the food.
And the fact that we're out here in New Mexico flight testing where the sun is great, and the reason we're here is because the chilies are even better.
Well, it's definitely chilly economically over here in Europe. Let's go straight to Alexis Tsipras.
I don't know what Madame Merkel wants to do, but I know what we want to do. We believe that Madame Merkel put Euro and Eurozone in a big danger. The austerity measures put Europe and Eurozone in a big danger. So we want to change the austerity measures, also in Greece and also in Europe. And we want to do this in cooperation with the other forces and the people of Europe, the people who want a big change, because everybody now understands that with this policy we are going directly to the hell.
But Angela Merkel isn't listening to Alexis Tsipras and Greece's Syriza party. It is opting for the road to hell. What was she discussing at the G8 summit in Camp David anyway? Here is the British Prime Minister on what happened.
It's not often you get the opportunity to watch a penalty shootout between an English team and a German team and watch the English team win. And there are many great privileges in this job, but to be able to do that with the German Chancellor was a great moment. But we did hug and make up afterwards.
And was the President engaged in the game as well?
He was. I had to explain some of the finer points of penalty shootouts while it was happening, and he was beginning to catch up on the rules by the time it was over.
No wonder Europe is in such a mess. Talking about football instead of the economic crisis, one thing Barack Obama may not be so happy about is a trial in the Central American nation of Guatemala, where US and Israeli support for a death squad dictator is being exposed. This man, Rios Montt, with US arms and Israeli training, massacred countless Guatemalans back in the 1980s. Finally, he is being brought to account. An estimated 200,000 people were killed or went missing between then and 1996 during the American-sponsored war against Guatemala's people. Can you believe that Israel was interfering with a country so many thousands of miles away? Today, and much closer to Mossad headquarters, the US and Israel are trying to destabilize Syria and now Lebanon. Here is Beirut, which has seen its worst fighting for 4 years. It seems that nothing will stop the United States and NATO from trying to overthrow the government in Damascus. Where is the quartet's Middle East envoy anyhow? Ah, Tony Blair wasn't in the Middle East this week. Instead, he was being called a war criminal back here in London. More on that next week. After all, it has been a busy one for crime. Charles Taylor sentenced at the ICC. The UK Prime Minister's former chief press secretary, Andy Coulson, arrested in London by Scottish police. Well, with me in the studio now is comedian David Mulholland to take us through the latest cartoons from around the world.
Hi, Afshin. Good to be back.
David, you know that today, in 1821, was the destruction of Kaidanis in Asia Minor by the Ottoman army. Tens of thousands of Greeks were made refugees.
I did not know that.
Right. I thought that's why you selected this cartoon.
No. This is because it looks like Greece may be out of the euro.
What's it saying here?
Well, it's saying the global economy, souvenir plate. And it's Greece, and it's a broken plate, because in Greek culture, they smash plates. That's sort of a stereotype about Greece.
Quite a generalization.
But here's the thing. Greece is 1% of the Eurozone economy. The truth is, the economy of the Eurozone can support Greek debt. It would be like 100 climbers roped together, and one of them can't carry their rucksack.
I like that simile. Climbers. Actually, I prefer a better simile, a broken plate. Anyway, we'll obviously wait and see what happens on that one. I think Syriza looked like being victorious. The next cartoon, however, is addressing the real power brokers of Europe.
Yes. I mean, here it is. It's François Hollande and Angela Merkel at a meal. And François Hollande is saying, it's for her. And Merkel's going, huh? And it's the bill. And, well, basically what François Hollande is saying is, and Angela Merkel now is isolated in the Eurozone because she's the one saying austerity, austerity, austerity. And pretty much everyone else is going, no, actually, we need growth.
The next cartoon about a country I was quite nearby, actually, recently, Yemen.
Yes. Well, what's going on with Yemen is Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which is based in Yemen, is making huge inroads.
As for that cartoon, obviously pointing to London because referring back to the London conference, of course, Americans being murdered by Americans in Yemen and the Americans killing people every other day by drone strike. It looks like they've lost that war. Okay, let's go to this one.
And here you have J.P. Morgan Chase banker sitting on a chair of a therapist saying, so I continue to ignore the warnings and gamble with those risky financial derivatives. Part of me realizes it's reckless, but I can't control myself. And the Republican therapist saying, your problem is obvious. Too much regulation. And what this is about is Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan, has been, for the last couple of years, been going, oh, there's too much regulation. And he admitted going, this has been a disaster. We completely not watching what we're doing. We made huge mistakes. It was sloppy. It was dumb. And the thing is even the financial regulators, because the Republicans have so gutted the ability of the U.S. administration.
The Republicans, it was the Democrats that abolished Glass-Steagall. It was the Democratic Party of the United States that created this mess. Actually, I have to mention one thing. Today, in 1919, anarchists simultaneously set off bombs in 8 separate U.S. cities. Maybe that's the future.
Well, that's what's going to happen if the Occupy Wall Street movement isn't successful.
Well, thank you very much, David. I don't think that cartoon needs any more explanation. You're off to Leicester Square for more suspicious liberal pro-democrat garbage comedy.
All right, thanks, Hampton.
As we mentioned earlier, US policy is now aimed at creating a civil war in Lebanon, and already we're seeing clashes in the capital, Beirut. I spoke to Gilad Atzmon, who fought in the IDF in the wars sponsored by the US and Israel in the 1980s, about the racism of Zionism and the concept of Jewishness itself. With me is Gilad Atzmon, the legendary saxophonist. Thanks so much for coming on the show, but away from saxophones for a moment. Let's begin because we hardly ever get them on the show. You're a former IDF man. Tell me about your epiphany in Lebanon.
Yeah, a lot of people are excited about my IDF history. I was far from being a hero. Most of the time, I was a saxophonist.
You're an IDF saxophonist.
Yeah, I was a saxophonist in the Air Force military band. But many of
our viewers will be shocked about. I mean, Sabra and Shatila, 1982, the year they have military bands during all of this. As well.
Yeah, you have to entertain the soldiers while they are killing. But this is not particularly Israeli. It's like it's a norm within Western armies. However, at a certain stage, because I come from a Zionist background, and at that stage I still believed in the military, in the Israeli military ethos, in what people in the West call Zionism. We didn't see it as Zionism in particular. We were Israeli patriots. I tried to do my best to become a combatant soldier. I was trained at a certain stage as a paramedic in a special unit. And as it happened, I saw quite a bit at the time of the Lebanon War. I saw a lot of blood of both Palestinians, Syrians, and Israelis. And it changed me completely. I realized how idiotic these wars are. Towards the end of my compulsory duty, I visited as a musician in Ansar. Ansar was basically a concentration camp, a place like Dachau or Guantanamo Bay. It was a massive camp on Lebanese soil where thousands of Palestinians and Lebanese were detained with no charges, obviously, or no proceedings. And what I saw there made me realize that as much as I was devastated by the Jewish narrative, by the Holocaust, by the Shoah. At that situation, I realized an answer in Israeli uniform, surrounded by thousands of Palestinians burned by the sun, surrounded by barbed wires. I realized that in that situation, there were the Jews. I was the Nazi. And it made it very clear to me that I have to break away.
Even in describing that situation, very rarely in public discourse do you hear a comparison or even a mention in the same sentence by pro-Palestinian supporters of anything to do with the Holocaust. It's got you into a lot of trouble. Fierce critics of Zionism are blaming you for this.
I think that this is a fair comment. When I equate between Israel and Nazi Germany, I try to be very precise and to clearly articulate what I am referring to. For instance, a lot of people within the Palestinian solidarity community or discourse like to talk about apartheid. And it makes a lot of sense because people understand what apartheid is. But I actually argue Israel is not apartheid. Apartheid is a system of exploitation of the indigenous. When it comes to Israel, Israel doesn't want to exploit the Palestinians. It wants to kick them out. So to a certain extent, Israel is actually performing here a policy that is not different from Nazi Lebensraum, living space, which is racially motivated expansionist ideology. And I think that if we do care about peace, if we do care about Palestinians, but if we also care about the Israelis and the Jews, we better start to tell the truth, because truth is of the essence, especially if you want to think of a resolution. I'm really tired of the level of spinning that is involved with the Palestinian solidarity discourse. Just before we start the program, we mentioned Norman Finkelstein, who recently also admitted that he's slightly tired of it for different reasons. I have a lot of followers now, and I think that it is my duty to tell what I think, what I believe, and the fact that people are upset by it only encourages me.
Well, you've written quite a number of books now, novels, so many different albums of music. Just describe to me a little bit about the reaction to this kind of talk, the reaction to the kinds of things you've been saying.
Yeah, it is very clear. It is very clear to me.
I mean, they call you an anti-Semite.
This is completely outrageous because I really hate everyone equally. and besides, as I mentioned to you, I'm just about to buy a Volvo to my wife. So
I think you're now trying to be a Jewish comedian on the
show.
Yeah,
I'm slightly funny.
But seriously, I mean, the level of anger and saying you've conflated Zionism with Semitism.
Zionism, okay.
This kind of charge.
Yeah, I believe my philosophy is very simple. And I mentioned it many times in the past. Israel defined itself as the Jewish state. Am I right? It decorates its airplanes and tanks with Jewish symbols. These facts alone allow us to ask, what is the Jewish state? Who are the Jews? And what is Jewishness? I make a very clear distinction between Judaism, the religion, which I hardly talk about, Jews, the people, which I never refer to, and Jewishness, the ideology. It is very clear to many of us, especially after following the work of Mersheimer, Walt, and Petras, that the Jewish lobby is one of the most significant powers in Western politics, in the parliament, just behind us.
But can you see the use of the word Zionist lobby versus Jewish lobby?
I don't want to use the word Zionism.
Now, why do you prefer this word Jewish lobby?
Because the word Zionism, as many Israelis admit now, recently we read about Avrum Burg talking about it, and 2 weeks ago, Israeli prominent writer Gideon Levy spoke about Zionism has very little to do with Israel. Zionism was an idea, a philosophy or ideology that maintained the Jews should form their own national home in Zion, i.e. Palestine. Once the Israeli was established in 1948, Zionism, at least from Israeli perspective, is a dead concept. I wasn't born into Zionism. I was raised as an Israeli patriot. My father was born as a Palestinian, was raised as an Israeli patriot. So Zionism means nothing to Israelis. The fact that few Jewish leftists want to talk about Zionism is to maintain a spin. Zionism is very relevant. We only within the Jewish diaspora, within the debate between those, the vast majority of world Jews, who feel strong affinity to Israel, and few sporadics, maybe 1 dozen, maybe 3 dozen, maybe 4 dozen Jews around the world that are really against Israel. We are talking about really few people who are very noisy, thanks God. I'm
How
very
are you
happy
treated for your politics, your novel writing amidst the mainstream media? Because a lot of people criticize the mainstream media for being one of the major drivers for pro-Israel propaganda.
I must admit that there are relentless attempts. Recently, even the Board of Deputy of British Jews tried to stop me from playing, putting pressure
they
on
named
the Art
you.
Council. They named me, and I actually operated in the name of British Jews, trying to stop me from playing, trying to stop the British Art Council from supporting a festival that featured me. Until now, not a single concert of mine has been cancelled. Not a single public performance of mine has been cancelled. It is very clear that this is what Zionists are engaged with. But I'm also concerned by the fact that people within our ranks are employing exactly the same tactics in the name of cultural boycott. I think that freedom of speech, and I'm happy to say it here in Press TV, freedom of speech and freedom of expression is the most precious concept for us in order to maintain what we really love and admire about our own culture. I don't think that you'll find me on a stage with a Zionist, but I tell you the truth. One of my greatest heroes is an American saxophonist, David Liebman. I love his playing. I admire him. I saw him many times playing with Star of David. I never asked him what it means. I would take him with me anytime. I love his playing. I really don't care what he thinks. And again, to equate this idea with Press TV, the fact that Britain stopped Press TV from being broadcasted in this country is one of the darkest moment of a British within the history of British culture for me. I'm devastated by this idea, and it is very clear to me that if this place become a closed society that is engaged in censorship, and we are getting there. I'm a musician. All I have to do in order to move is just to pack my saxophone and my laptop, and I can operate from any place around this planet.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I know that any viewers in London can see you at Pizza Express on
between the 7th and the 9th of June.
Thank you so much for coming on the
Thank
show.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Gilad Atzmon. That's it for this week. You can email us at comment@doublestandardstv.com. I'll leave you with Gilad playing Liberating the American People live in London with pictures of the Israeli Defense Force in action in the past few days. See you next week.